Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I'm Fred Pfeiffer. Thank you for listening. In this episode, you're going to hear a recording that Tim Gallagher, NBA historian, and I made just after the Milwaukee loss, which was last week, before Jimmy's explosion for 50-plus in Philadelphia, saving us from a disastrous five-game losing streak, and also before the Dallas loss, where the Bulls had a big lead that they squandered. And in the interim, unfortunately, we lost Joakim Noah, probably for the year. Mark and I are going to record an episode coming up shortly where we're going to discuss the loss and potentially losing Joakim, not just for this season, but for the rest of his career as he becomes a free agent and probably looks to explore bringing his services elsewhere. I still am of the belief that there's a good chance Joakim will be back, but we'll discuss that in a future episode. So I hope you enjoy this talk between Tim and I. We get into a variety of topics. Most notably at the end, we talk about the Spurs versus Golden State. It looks like they're on a collision course for the Western Conference Finals, and we'll see who gets there. And Tim provides his thoughts on that, along with the Bulls' play of recent, including a discussion and a chat about the loss at home against Washington, the loss at Milwaukee. After today, the Bulls won today with an incredible game from Rose, an incredible game from Pau Gasol, who almost together, just when they play that pick and roll as well, when Gasol is hitting his jump shot and Rose is playing as effective as he did today off that pick and roll, the Bulls are almost unbeatable. That's almost an unstoppable play. And they worked it to perfection today, as they did in game one of the Cavs series last year. It was really exciting to see. And it's another in a long line of roller coaster rides that this team is taking us on. Just amazing that, you know, that's a good win to win at Detroit today against a pretty solid team. To win on the road at Detroit, very impressive, and doing so in pretty convincing fashion. So here we are again. You know, of note, the Bulls are 9-2 now without Joakim Noah. I believe 15-14 with him. So in a weird way, this might be like Luol Deng, where, you know, we traded Luol Deng a few years back, and almost immediately when he was traded, we started playing much better and going to the playoffs. That was the year that Noah garnered MVP votes, where he led us to 48 wins as Deng was basically traded right around January, the first week of January or so, if I recall. And now we lose Noah for probably the remainder of the year, and you know, we're 9-2 without him, and we'll see where it goes. So, exciting times ahead. Hope you enjoy this podcast. All the best to you. And follow me at CBE Fred. Email the show, ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. Look forward to hearing from you if you have any questions. All the best in the interim, and I'll talk to you soon.
This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009, and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chakago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not.
You hungry?
Hey, Ma, we get some meatloaf.
Think this is the greatest, I will fight you. That's no lie.
Can you clap for the killers?
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw them off that.
One time for the killers.
Whoa.
Double up for them gangsters.
Just living the dream.
I have been waiting to hit one of the Chicago Bulldogs.
I gotta be honest, I come in, it's like a little like I'm trying to get my bears, or cartoons, or mom, and it's like you still got it. It's living the dream.
Tim Gallagher, NBA historian, joining the Chicago Bullseye. Tim, how's it going, brother?
It's going well. We're in the thick of the season now, and we were just looking at those Eastern Conference stats and standings, and boy, it's really bunched up, other than Cleveland kind of starting to make their move now with Kyrie being healthy, and at least for Bulls fans and the other teams trying to unseat Cleveland in the East, it's looking a little scary that Kyrie's back and looking pretty good so far, and they kind of held serve, I guess you'd say, until he got back, and now it looks like they're starting to move away from the pack.
Yeah, you know, here we are again on a roller coaster of a season. We're in the midst of a three-game losing streak, losing at Atlanta, which is tough to stomach, losing to an undermanned Washington team. I mean, it's also understandable losing at Atlanta, but losing at home to an undermanned Washington team and then losing you know, last night to Milwaukee at Milwaukee. I mean, obviously, it's the NBA. Milwaukee beat Golden State there earlier this year, and it was a pretty close game. But now the fan base, again, is jumping out the window. The sky's falling. But I will admit to a certain level of disappointment now that Derek's hurt again. And obviously, this tendonitis of the patella tendon, I think is what they're calling it, can be a serious injury. I think Danny Granger missed the whole year with it. Derek says, hey, it's not going to keep me out long. But God almighty, is this frustrating. I'd like to get your opinion on where we're at now. Where do you think we're going? And what would you do if you were John Pax and Garcap?
Right. Well, it is frustrating with the injuries, and not having McDermott, I think, really hurt in the second half against Milwaukee. Because, you know, in the Milwaukee game, you know, the Bulls were still looking pretty good with a few minutes to go in the game, and playing that tough on the road and being down, you know, without Rose once he went out, you know, it looked like a very winnable game, you know, and that was in reach really until the last few minutes, and then the Bucks went on their little spurt. So I wasn't so concerned about the Milwaukee loss on the road. Obviously concerned about Rose, but the game that really kind of stuck it to me a little bit was that Wizards game at home that they lost. So, like you said, an undermanned Wizards team, meaning without Bradley Beal, who I think is, you know, kind of a the Klay Thompson of the East, I'd say. You know, obviously Curry and Thompson are in a class of themselves, but I look at Wall and Beal, that combo, very similar to a Curry-Klay Thompson combination. And so without Beal, And that being a home game for the Bulls, you just have to win that game, right?
And they're missing Gortat, too. I mean, it's not like they're also missing Gortat, which is, you know, all the more frustrating. And, again, they just didn't have the energy. You could tell Fred in his postgame comments is pretty angry. He's about as angry as he's going to get.
Right. Well, and looking at the box score, a couple things jumped off the page to me. And one was that Rose was a minus 26 on the plus minus, which is, you know, you know, that's just so far off the charts. And he had one assist and four turnovers. And when you compare it to John Wall, and watching Wall in that game, he looked like the Derrick Rose in his prime to me, right? Just blowing by people and in command of the game. 10 assists, 2 turnovers. So it kind of really showed the contrast of where Rose was and where he is now compared to somebody like Wall, who's an elite point guard in the league. So, yeah, I'm concerned. And obviously, you know, Noah's back now, but that kind of coincided with the losing streak. And I, again, I don't know, you can't pin it all on Joe, but, you know, and Jimmy's been kind of carrying the load down the stretch and putting up the numbers. But, I am concerned. And the thing about McDermott, and again, I'm not sure, and you might have more insight on this in terms of that Wizards game, you know, was Rose already still already starting to feel the knee issues in that game, and that kind of hurt his production and productivity there, and especially when you got to keep up with a jet like John Wall. With McDermott, I saw he didn't have many shots in that Wizards game, and I've always maintained that for Doug, even if he's not getting huge minutes, he's got to get at least 10 attempts up, right, just to stretch the defense, even if a couple of them are bad shots. And he's gotten better, I think, at chasing shots. You know, I heard that term once about Gary Neal when he was with the Spurs, right? So he came in as kind of an instant offense type person, chasing shots. I like that term. And I think when Doug comes in, that's what he needs to do. And I know the defenses are keeping a closer watch on him and maybe not giving him the space. But, again, I think he needs to get the attempts to make that more impactful. So, you know, although all this said, I'm looking at the standings and the Bulls are still the number 3 seed, right? So it's not like things are crashing and burning, although, you know, it sort of looks like some teams are starting to make their move. I mentioned Cleveland, who is already ahead of the pack, and, you know, the Pacers, Pistons. I still think the Wizards are going to be a playoff team, even though they're outside of the 8th spot currently, but I think, assuming Beal comes back, then they're going to make their move. And they've been obviously a fixture in the playoffs the last couple of years, and Bulls fans will remember they knocked the Bulls out, you know, a couple of years ago, and that was kind of the breakthrough for the Wizards, even though the Bulls were, you know, without Rose and a little bit of a depleted Bulls roster. But that was one of those pivotal seasons that kind of propelled the Wizards, I think. So, gosh, it's, you know, again, other than Brooklyn and Philly, everybody in the East is a tough customer on any given night, and that's why it's especially important you got to take care of business on your home court.
Yeah, you know what bothered me? Back to the Washington game. Noah Comdati's 0 for 7. All 7 shots are in the paint. I think 6 of them were within 3 feet of the rim. I don't know how you do that, but somehow he did it. And then the next night, in Milwaukee's 1 of 3, all 3 shots he takes are within 3 feet of the rim. To go 1 for 10 over a course of 2 games and you don't take a shot outside the paint, that's hard to describe bad. I don't know what's up, you know. Obviously, he's coming back for an injury. You're not going to expect, you know, him to be going 7 to 10, but you're a big man shooting in the paint. You can't shoot 1 of 10. It's just horrific.
Right.
And you know, his defense isn't up to the level that he used to be to say, well, he counterbalances that with some stellar D. I mean, obviously, he's a good defender, but he's not all-world anymore. So that's frustrating. And on top of that, Jimmy, as great as he played against the Raptors, down the stretch against Milwaukee, I really thought he played terrible. If you look at his last three shots, he had 3 shots in the last 2 minutes where he had Snell wide open with 2 of them in the corner for a 3, and Snell had an excellent game last night. Ordinarily, I'd be like, hey, Jimmy, fire away. But with the way that Snell was playing and he's wide open in the corner for an open 3, you have to get him the ball. And he had 2 opportunities to do that, and he fired up 2 contested jumpers. And then on that one last shot he had where he kind of laid it up on a reverse layup, you know, he had Aaron Brooks sitting in the corner for a wide open 3. You can't, even on a shot he made in the final 4 minutes, I thought he held the ball for about 7 seconds or seemed like an eternity. He did a step back and contested jumper that he sank, but really wasn't a great shot. You know, Jimmy let us down a little bit in that Milwaukee game, I felt, down the stretch. I know he had a great game overall. With, you know, tons of points. I think he had over 30 points, but, you know, down the stretch, he didn't bring it. So, you know, everybody's
right. I'm hoping those are the kind of things that they address in film sessions, you know, to have Jimmy see what else was open there. And I appreciate Jimmy carrying the load and, you know, especially with Derek out, you know, having the mindset that I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to hit these big shots late in the game. But as he becomes more and more of a focal point of the defense, he's going to have to find trusted guys to kick the ball out to, right? Even, you know, even Jordan would kick it out to Paxson and to Kerr, and, you know, he had his go-to guys, right? And when the defense was hyper-guarding him at key points in games. And, yeah, I was a little concerned down the stretch in Milwaukee, too, because we talked about this going way back to last year in the playoffs where, you know, the thing about Milwaukee, and they've definitely underachieved this year for a number of reasons, but, you know, when they have that lineup of all these hybrid players that we've talked about, right, the Greek Freak and Chris Middleton and, you know, John Henson, Michael Carter-Williams is a long, athletic, you know, point guard, more or less. So, you know, they're all kind of Tony Snell-ish guys or bigger, right? And so that's tough to match up. And I had some concern seeing Brooks out there, just knowing how small he is, and Milwaukee doesn't really have anybody they go small with, especially down the stretch. You know, maybe O.J. Mayo is the smallest guy, and he's probably 6'4", 6'5", right? So that makes for a tough matchup problem. And, boy, that little fadeaway that Chris Middleton hit, Jimmy was all over him. That, you know, that was kind of the dagger. And, you know, I thought if the Bulls somehow held them on that possession, there's still a chance. But he hit that little to the left of the lane, and that little fadeaway, which was – Got to hand it to him. That was a tough shot with Jimmy draped all over him. And
yeah,
to me, the game ended when he made that shot. The Bulls kind of hung in there, but you know, and that wasn't Brooks, obviously, that was getting beat on that shot. But, you know, with the matchups and size issues, I was concerned going down the stretch a little bit with Milwaukee.
There's something up with McDermott. I mean, he missed a few games due to knee injury or, you know, knee tendonitis. And yesterday they show him on a one play where he's grimacing in pain, and, you know, his minutes have been down quite a bit. He's not shooting the ball at the same level. This is exactly how he played last year, right before he was out with arthroscopic knee surgery. So I'm really concerned about him. But bigger picture, the Bulls don't have any outside shooting with Dunleavy out and McDermott hobbled. I don't care what offense you're running. If you don't have that outside shooting in today's NBA, you're not going to spread the floor. They don't have enough guys who are able to hit the three. They're clearly a shooter short, and you know, until Dunleavy comes back, if he does. And that's a huge issue for this team going forward to me, is you don't have enough consistent three-point shooting. Now, Snell, you know, turns it around and starts hitting consistently, like he was for the most part, I guess, from three-point range for most of this year. And Aaron Brooks, you know, starts shooting again at over 40%. I don't know where he's at on the year, but last year he was over 40. Then you may be able to get through this, but, you know, otherwise, they're still a shooter short on the perimeter.
Right. Well, and Fred, you and I have hoisted up our share of jump shots and thinking about Doug. You know, legs are such a big part of shooting, right? Not only movement without the ball, but just getting good balance and good lift. And if Doug's got issues with his knees for a shooter, that's almost the worst thing that could happen. So I don't know the exact diagnosis, and we'll track that. But I really think, you know, we've seen when Doug's healthy and either hitting his shots or is a threat to hit his shots, what that means to the Bulls offensively. And yeah, I don't know where you go pluck a good outside shooter. Hopefully the Bulls had some scouts at the D League showcase. Maybe there's somebody that's, maybe as a shooting specialist, a 3-point shooter or someone they can find. Although, you know, obviously that's a long shot to find someone like that. And, you know, and even that's going to only be a temporary thing because hopefully you've got Doug and or Dunleavy both back in action here in the not too distant future.
Yep. Well, I'd like to get your opinion. You know, now we've talked about the Bulls, I'd like to again open it up to the rest of the NBA and talk a little bit about the Lionel Collins firing with the Nets and in general the mess that is the Nets and the discussion that they've reached out to Tom Thibodeau to take over that team. Love to get your opinion on that situation overall and how it's fit to do.
Right. Well, with Lionel Hollins, you know, I mean, I thought it was strange when he got fired at Memphis after being coach of the year and got them pretty far in the playoffs. But, you know, I didn't see that personality, you know, being a good fit. And the other thing, just with that franchise in general, I thought it was really telling when Jason Kidd left pretty abruptly, right? Here's the Nets give him, you know, a year after, you know, the season after he had retired as a player, they give him a head coaching job in the NBA, which, you know, there's only 30 of them, right? And they're cherished. So the fact that he got an opportunity with New Jersey and, you know, obviously they kind of mortgaged the future when they got Pierce and Garnett and traded away draft picks and, you know, tried to replicate, you know, kind of what the Celtics and Heat tried to do on a more of a poor man's level, I guess you'd say, and obviously that didn't pan out, and now they're without those picks, and the future's mortgaged, and Garnett's gone, Pierce is gone, Deron Williams is gone, so all the guys they tried to build from, you know, to go with Joe Johnson and Brook Lopez as kind of the core, you know, that really doesn't exist now, so it's a pretty bad roster with no picks and a pretty bleak future, so I can't imagine, you know, someone like Tibbs would want to step into a roster and, you know, a franchise with a history like that, just with not a lot of short-term opportunity there. So I would think he can be pretty selective on where he wants to go. I can't imagine Tibbs wanting to go somewhere that's in such a rebuilding mode. Although, you know, maybe he gets the power of someone like what Stan Van Gundy has in Detroit, and he's obviously turned that situation around, but it didn't happen overnight. It's taken some time, and I don't know if Detroit's still going to be able to sustain this. They're four games over 500 now, and, you know, in that seventh spot, but, you know, we'll see, because the East is, like we said, so competitive, and there's a lot of teams kind of in the thick of where Detroit is. There's some other names I thought about for New Jersey. You know, Mark Jackson has some ties, obviously, to that New York City area, played at St. John's, had some success, obviously, with Golden State and kind of got them, you know, teed things up for Steve Kerr and now Luke Walton to take Golden State to where they are. So that might be a possibility just because of his local ties and popularity. Another thing I read that I thought was interesting was one of the Spurs assistants, who's Ettore Messina, so an Italian coach in the EuroLeagues. He coached for the team that the Nets owner had in Russia. I believe it's CSKA Moscow.
Yep.
He coached for the Nets owner previously. So that's, you know, that's an interesting connection there. It could be interesting also that, you know, a Euro coach, obviously David Blatt, who's originally an American, but had a lot of success coaching in Europe, and obviously things are going pretty well for him in Cleveland. So that might be a possibility as well. I know there's some other names out there. I didn't see Scott Brooks' name mentioned with that, but I always thought Scott Brooks is a really good players coach and just a positive energy guy, and obviously had a lot of success in OKC and kind of in a different way maybe than Tibbs. Things just sort of ran their course for him in OKC. Not that it was a disaster or anything. They were always in the playoffs. He had some injuries, obviously, with Durant that affected things. So that would be a name I would consider, and if I was an owner of a team that but with the GM position open, since Billy King's sort of been reassigned and no permanent head coach, there's a lot of question marks there. And again, I don't know if I can only see Tibbs doing it if he got a Stan Van Gundy type of deal where he's in control of everything. He's the GM, he's the coach, and has total control of basketball operations.
Boy, would I love to see that. I would love to see that just so I could laugh and laugh. As he signs Lou Aldang to a max deal and Amir Sheik to a max deal, I'm not a big fan of his, general. I think he is judge of talent by the minutes he's played guys. I don't think that would work well at all. But I think as a coach, hey, no arguing there. I mean, he's a rock solid head coach, and I think he would quickly at least make and that's a respectable team, although clearly not a playoff team.
Right. Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, last point I was going to say with the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets, is that there is no salary cap on what you pay a coach, and their owner obviously has pretty unlimited wealth. So somebody could take that job just for the, even though the roster is pretty bleak and being a contender anytime soon is very unlikely. They could take it for the payday, and it could be a very significant payday. So that's but I think the Nets situation is very concerning in terms of just any success that they're going to see in the near future. I don't think there will be any.
Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Clippers, who, before tonight they were the owners of the largest winning streak in the NBA. I'd like to get your opinion. The Nets, despite missing Blake, I'd like to get your opinion on why did they seem to play so well without him, number one, and do you take anything from that, that they seem to play so well without, and I think the same thing happened last year, without such a key player on that team.
Right. Well, it's very unusual, and the Clippers have definitely struggled at times this year as well. They've kind of had some ups and downs similar to the Bulls. And, the thing about the stability of a franchise like the Clippers, now that they have Ballmer in ownership and Doc Rivers has clearly, got total control of the basketball side of the business as GM and coach. He gets criticized for that sometimes as well. But I think the key with them is they've stayed the course, right? They didn't blow things up, and I'm tying this back to the Bulls, but I still think it's a little early to make a major trade. Or now, if Rose's injury is actually serious, and he's going to be missing significant periods of time, or McDermott is, I think you do need to make some kind of move, especially if Dunleavy's still a ways away, right? You're going to need some perimeter help, that, like we said earlier. So that may force their hand to make some sort of a move, but I think it's going to be driven more by injuries than just the state of the team. But it is strange when a player like Griffin, who's such a physical specimen and talented player, is out of the lineup and they go on a win streak, because a lot of people really have criticized the Clippers out west, saying that beyond the big three, which they're considering Chris Paul, Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, the rest of the lineup is are just role players, right? In terms of just competing for a championship, certainly J.J. Redick's a very competent player. Obviously, people off the bench like Paul Pierce, Jamal Crawford, those guys have had success in the league, but are either aging or they've kind of maxed out at what they can do. I know when we talked, I think we talked earlier on a podcast when the Clippers had played at Chicago, and that was an interesting game, and I talked a little bit about I always like those glue guys, like in this case, Luke Richard and Mbah Mute. We talked about it a little bit with Jarrett Dudley, who had been with the Bucks previously, now with the Wizards. So I see Luke Richard as one of those kind of guys that, you know, and again, his increased playing time, obviously he was playing a little more even when Griffin was in the lineup, but I saw Mbah Mute play at UCLA, and again, even though he's not going to wow you with any of his individual skills, he's a very competent defender and just a great team player. And, you know, one of those plus minus guys that's, you know, the box score, other than that plus minus column, might not, you know, there might not be numbers that jump out on you other than that. Things just go better with him in there, or if he's able to lock down another team's top scorer. So,
yep.
So it's little things like that, but I think more than anything, they just kind of stayed the course. And Doc Rivers, I'm always amazed how composed he is after, especially after tough losses and or games where they were doing hack of Jordan, and you know it's an ugly game. And you know, I see a lot of the Clippers games out here, and they definitely have their streaks. You know, both good ones like they're on now, and but you know they'll have some meltdowns as well, you know, within games or even, you know, stretches of the season. But you know, I think the fact that they just kind of stay the course, Doc Rivers is clearly in charge. That kind of confidence and stability leads to success like they've been having lately.
What about, you know, when you talk about the Clippers, you. DeAndre Jordan, obviously, his consecutive game streak is broken tonight. He's got pneumonia. And when you think of DeAndre Jordan, you can't help turn to the thoughts to the team he spurned, Dallas Mavericks, who are playing surprisingly well this year. I was shocked to see that their record in the West, last time I looked, was around 22-14. A lot better than I expected them to be. Have you paid any attention to the Mavs, and do you have any reason why, despite the loss, basically, of, you know, not getting DeAndre Jordan, losing a guy like Monta Ellis, why are they playing so well?
Well, a couple thoughts on that, and going back to some of our past podcasts when we had the whole analysis of DeAndre Jordan, and I'm not a huge DeAndre Jordan fan. I've mentioned that quite a few times, and I don't think he's a championship center. And just I did some quick research before this call, knowing we might touch on this. So DeAndre Jordan is averaging a little over 11 points a game and 13 rebounds a game. His salary is $19.7 million. And Dallas essentially replaced him with Dja Dja Pachulia, who's averaging almost 11 rebounds and 11 points a game. So very similar. Now, DeAndre Jordan's going to block some more shots for you and, you know, and more highlight spectacular plays. But Dja Dja Pachulia is making $5.2 million a year. So, you know, almost a quarter of, you know, a salary of DeAndre Jordan, it's about the same productivity. So, and I kind of thought Dallas is shrewd enough to do something like that in terms of putting the lineup together. When we did our Western Conference preview, I had Dallas on the outside of those last two spots. You might recall, you know, the first six spots were pretty much a lock. And then I was saying everyone other than the Lakers and Kings was going to fight it out for those last two spots. I had Utah, which is, you know, they're in the eighth spot right now, but Dallas is all the way in the fifth spot currently. And so a couple things, though, with Dallas, the reason I was a little skeptical going into the season is, one, Nowitzki's age, number two, Chandler Parsons' health, number three, Deron Williams' ability to integrate with that team and his health, and they've actually, you know, knock on wood, you know, they've hit it out of the park on all of those things, right? So Parsons is, they're all playing, they're managing Dirk's minutes. Dirk's still, you know, he'll have games of rest, you know, a la Tim Duncan. You know, but Carlisle's very, very savvy in terms of managing his minutes. And, you know, I just think Dallas is one of those top-notch franchises. I mean, Mark Cuban can get a little wacky on occasion, but he runs a first-class organization, and he's, you know, someone like Rick Carlisle who really knows what he's doing. He's, you know, won an NBA championship as a coach. So I think the fact that those guys have stayed healthy And Wes Matthews is there as well. That was another big question mark, even though he's had an excellent run with the Blazers coming off an Achilles injury. You know, that, even with as great as the surgeons are today and the ability to have guys come back from injuries like that, that still was another question mark I had. And Wes Matthews is playing and playing really well. So you start throwing out those names and they're kind of doing the center by committee. So without all the ups and downs of DeAndre Jordan and having Hackett Jordan and things like that, they're a very competent and competitive team.
So while we're still on the West, and you see a lot more of West basketball than probably we do, you know, being pretty much in the East, having 52 games against the East, the Bulls are focused on the East. Who are some of the most improved players in the West this year that have really impressed you that you didn't expect to see, you know, play so well or take that jump?
Yeah, there's a couple names that I've looked at the way they played. One is Will Barton, who's a former Blazer and was kind of a journeyman, but with Denver is really playing some fantastic basketball. You know, athletic wing, he's had some Diesel Dunk of the Week type nomination dunks, and you know, very explosive and an improved player. So, and the fact that he essentially got some of his training in the Blazers organization ties into some of these other names I'm going to mention. So another one is C.J. McCollum. So some of the listeners that follow college basketball might recall he was the guard from Lehigh that upset Duke in the NCAA tournament, and but was injured his senior year in college, but was picked by Portland and kind of was brought along slowly, but with some of the roster moves that Portland's made, he's getting his chance now, and seeing him combined with Damian Lillard, really, it kind of reminds me of an Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars type backcourt. I mean, very explosive and talented backcourt, and they're both very young players. And staying with the Portland theme, another player is Alan Crabb, who played college ball at Cal, came out early, was not a high draft pick. A lot of people thought he should have stayed in school to finish up at Cal. But again, whoever's doing the player development at Portland, there's a common thread here where these guys are just getting better and better, and very impressed with those guys. And, you know, the odd thing is another name you could throw out there for most improved in the West is Steph Curry, which seems a little crazy when you think he's the MVP of the league, but he seems to be topping himself, you know, week after week, right?
Oh, right, right.
With the record they have, and, you know, how can the MVP be the most improved player in the league? But just, he's such a transcendent type talent and things that he does, and just the whole package of talent and leadership and flair. It's kind of unprecedented in the history of the league in a lot of ways. One other quick point on Lillard at Portland. You know, I think I certainly thought he's an excellent player, an all-star type player, but with LaMarcus Aldridge gone, Wes Matthews gone, Batum gone, that, you know, people are going to just totally concentrate on him, and he's still having a great season. He's had a little injury issue with his foot, but I don't know if you saw some of the shots he hit against OKC the other night. He just took over the game in the fourth quarter and hitting shots just in transition, three or four steps behind the three-point line, and not with shot clock winding down, just feeling it, and just really has gotten a deeper appreciation of his talent. And especially on a somewhat depleted Blazers roster where a lot of focus is on him. So those are a couple of the names that I've observed so far this season.
I'd like to get your opinion on, you know, the Spurs, due to the Warriors' just incredible start, people haven't really paid attention to how good the Spurs have played, and they're right behind them. It's really, truly unbelievable how those two teams have kind of separated themselves from, you know, the rest of the NBA. And it looks like right now that they're on a collision course for the Western Conference Finals. Now, the Warriors avoided the Spurs last year, obviously with the Spurs being upset in Game 7 against the Clippers last year. How do you see those two teams matching up? And do you see the Spurs possibly, you know, beating Golden State?
Well, the Spurs are positioned right where they love it, right? So they're behind Golden State. So all the attention is really on Golden State. So the Spurs, any other season, somebody being 34-6 at this point, and they've won 9 in a row, and you know, just doing some incredible things. And but just the way they like it, they're a little bit under the radar. And you could also mention Kawhi Leonard for most improved player in the league. And that's, again, almost in the same breath as Steph Curry. Well, how could a guy as good as Kawhi Leonard, you know, be considered for the most improved player? But he's kind of taken his game to the next level as well, and really kind of stepped to the forefront now of the Spurs with some of the aging veterans. Obviously, LaMarcus Aldridge, a new addition to the Spurs, is right there with them in terms of their go-to players. But Kawhi, I'd say, stepped ahead of Parker, Ginobili, Duncan as really the go-to guy. And I've heard some discussion about Kawhi Leonard really being the best two-way player in the league in terms of how much his offense has improved. And he's obviously a defensive stopper. He was the league's defensive player of the year last year. So, Kawhi Leonard, you gotta think of him too. Even in the MVP discussions, but obviously Curry seems to be, again, ahead of the pack on that. And LeBron's always in that conversation too. But in terms of those teams on a crash course, you know, I think Golden State privately was probably so relieved they didn't have to face the Spurs last year on their path to the finals. And I still think the Spurs, with some of their veteran experience, even though these things Golden State is doing are record-breaking and they just came off a championship season, I still feel like the Spurs have a little bit of a mental edge. And I say that just because Steve Kerr was a player for Popovich and still kind of an understudy, I guess you'd say, to Popovich. And some of those Spurs veteran players have been through what the Warriors experienced last year. The Spurs have been there many times. And just, I think there's that experience and mental edge, and you have a relentless Warrior like a Kawhi Leonard who, you know, who's not going to back down from anybody on Golden State. You know, he and Curry are very similar in that way, that they're just such leaders and so talented and just live for the ultimate moment. You know, if those two teams play in the Western Conference Finals, that's really going to be a treat that I hope we see. You know, my gut tells me the Spurs still have a slight mental edge, and I think that series would go 6 or 7 games, but I just have a hunch on the Spurs. We'll see how that plays out, and obviously injuries and you know, some other factors would play into that with the health of some of the older Spurs players, if you know, if they're going to be at full strength. And obviously, once you get to the playoffs, you've got, you know, rest in between games, and Pop is pretty good about managing minutes during the course of the season. So hopefully, unless something unforeseen happens, we'll get a clash like that. I'm still curious when Steve Kerr is going to come back. I'm almost thinking at this point, since Luke Walton has done such a great job, that he would probably maybe coach through the All-Star game, and then maybe Kerr will come back after that. I don't have any inside information on that, but I've just been wondering about the timing.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. And I mean, I can't wait. I mean, just thinking about a Spurs-Golden State Western Conference finale is just awesome to comprehend. And, you know, I'm kind of kind of in agreement with you. I feel that the Spurs can beat them, and I think they will, actually, you know. I just think they match up well. And, you know, Aldridge, a lot depends on how well that guy plays. But he's impressed me over the last few years with some incredible performances that didn't lead to wins, but in the playoffs that I thought, man, this guy is something else. And, you know, he'll buy in, and that team is going to, I think, represent the West in the finals.
Right. Well, the other thing with Popovich, and I know especially Curry and Thompson can go off, you know, and they've had 30-point quarters this year, right, where they go off. But Popovich is one of the best I've seen in the league, that the moment things start to get out of hand, right, so the other team goes on a little flurry, or somebody, you know, hits a couple shots in a row that aren't contested, he wastes no time in calling a timeout and just has such a great sense of, nope, no more of this, right? And I think sometimes the Warriors they go on those bursts, and I think before other teams even realize what hit them, you know, there's been a 10-point run, right? And I think Popovich is better than most coaches in terms of pulling the plug as soon as they, you know, things start to turn and having that intuition.
And disrupting a team's rhythm. I absolutely agree with you. Absolutely agree.
Right. Tim,
thanks a ton for joining the podcast again. You've been more than generous with your time. Really appreciate it. All the best to you. I can't wait to talk to you again in the next few days.
Well, sounds great, Fred. I know just these standings day to day in the East are so fascinating. We touched on it a little bit, but just on any given night, you know, teams can move a couple of different spots in the seedings. And again, we're still in mid-January, so there's a lot of basketball to be played. And hopefully the Bulls will turn things around after this little losing streak and get things back on course and get healthy.
Well, it better start with the 76ers, because if it doesn't, it's going to get real ugly. Real quick.
Yeah, just don't let Ish Smith go wild. The minute he's been quite a spark for them, actually. We talked about that a little bit on the last podcast. So, and again, I think, you know, the Sixers are more serious about winning. Not, again, they're obviously, you know, a dismal team in relation to most all the other teams, but they seem to be playing better and more focused on trying to win rather than just get through the season and stockpile more lottery picks. So, again, they're not as dangerous as most of the other teams in the East, but the Bulls better be ready to play against everybody.
Amen. Well, thanks, brother, again for joining us, and looking forward to having you on again soon. All the best to you, Tim. Talk to you later.
Okay, Fred. Thank you. Talk soon.